All right, hi, so my name's Andy Bissett.
I'm James Allen.
And this is the Ball Chat Sports Podcast.
Go on then, Bissett. Kick us off, son. You're the man with the intro. Yeah.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Ball Chat Sports Podcast. We are absolutely delighted to be welcoming Tino back to the podcast for his second appearance. How's it going, Tino?
I'm buzzing, yeah. I'm glad to be back and not 11 bottles of Peroni deep this time. I might actually talk some sense.
Even less chance of talking sense, I reckon, to be honest with you.
Probably.
We've got Tina on to talk about the boxing mainly, but you're also going to chip in with some footy chat and obviously with all the regular stuff. So as you might not have known, Tina, because I know that you listen to pretty much, well, I'd say like 75% of the pods, but maybe not the sort of recent ones. We actually kick off with a something we call the preamble ramble now. So this is just going to kind of pose a question to you guys for 5 minutes and just get both your inputs on this. So we're going to start off this week. Is it okay to switch sports teams' allegiances, or are you morally bankrupt if you do?
Absolutely not, man. Well, change supporting your team, basically. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, change. Oh, completely change. Not, man.
Jack Allen, for instance.
Now, listen.
Aston Villa, one of the worst ones ever.
Let me pose a counter argument, right? You only support who you support because one of your parents or your mates support that team. So I would say if you change allegiances, you're even more of a man. Do you know what I mean? You start thinking for yourself, you start thinking for yourself, right?
Not at all, being
a sheep.
My dad supported Birmingham and he took me to support Birmingham, and it's probably the worst thing he's ever done for me, but I'm not changing. That's it. You stick with what you're given and that's it, man.
I'm quite enjoying this, actually. This complete change of opinions between you two. The contrast, really, because they actually had this on, they was talking about this on the ESPN radio this week. And the geezer who's an older guy, he's about 60, but he was saying that his dad sort of like, his dad said, oh, you can't be a Yankees fan and you're going to start off being a Mets fan or whatever it was. And he said what Jim said, like, you're allowed to have one change. So like, you've got that team that you're forced into through your dad or your uncle or whatever, but you're allowed one change and that's it. But when you make that change, you have to stick with that team. So unless I'm mistaken, Jim, you used to be a Blackburn fan for whatever reason. I think because they won the Premier League in what, 95, and then you changed to Arsenal.
Mate, I was four years old when they won the Premier League. It weren't because of that. It's because I was started. That's when I first started watching football, man. And I like Morten Gabbs Pedersen and two guy and that. And I thought they were sick. And I think was David Bentley playing from at that time as well. They had a sick team. But the thing is, the switching just once. Now, I don't agree with, man. I'll switch unlimited times, man. Do you know how many times I wanted to stop watching Arsenal because I've been so shit? And then last week they beat Spurs 3-1. First time I've been able to enjoy being an Arsenal fan in time. Why should I be miserable? Why should I be miserable?
Sports is supposed to bring... Football fandom is about being miserable. And like you kind of take pride in your team being shit. That's why me and Tino, we're Birmingham fans. Like, we're never going to not be Birmingham fans. All right, we might go in and out of our relationship with them. Like, you know what I mean? Sometimes we might think, right, I'm not even going to bother like watching the game or whatever, which I do on occasion. And it's even worse going down there as well because you have to fucking pay to watch them as well. Do you know what I mean?
You don't want to stab your eyeballs out.
So it's a shocker. But the worst thing you can do, and as you brought up, Tino, is switch from Blues to Villa. Jack Allen.
I disagree with what you said there a minute ago. You're allowed one change. You're not allowed any changes, man. Like, I think you're allowed to have like a second team you like watching, and like a second team you've got to have a liking to. But you get your team and that's it. You stick with them through thick and thin.
I think, you know, what's funny about this, it's probably the first week Jack Allen's actually going to listen to the pod and he's took over the intro. Like,
I remember when you told me that he was a Villa fan, and I think it was Christmas Day or something, we were on the session, my first one back in Birmingham, and I just got on the phone to him and just started messaging him.
So yeah, I think we've all put out our lots there. I'm an absolute cretin, right? I'll switch as many times as I like. I've got no fealty to anyone. Bissett's kind of sitting on the fence a little bit, right? And Tino's absolute stalwart Blues fan till he dies. So, yeah.
All right, we'll get on with the five things you might miss then. So, number one's from the Ryder Cup. So, there was some gimme controversy, and I think I might have to explain this to you two if you haven't heard of this before, because it's kind of a golfing etiquette thing that is, you know, you don't really get this in other sports. So basically, to explain it, so the nature of match play, which is where scoring happens on a hole-by-hole basis rather than the total, which they would accumulate, it means that balls do not need to find the bottom of the cup. So basically, they don't have to put it for it to be considered a win in the Ryder Cup. So basically, it's kind of like sportsmanship, gamesmanship debate. So what's happened is this weekend is there's been a couple of instances where you're meant to just give, right? If the ball's, say, within 6 foot of the hole, you just kind of give them the win, basically. But the opposition have actually asked them to put it and everyone's kicked off and everyone's kicking up a storm. So it's kind of a golf etiquette issue that I haven't really seen before. And I'm not sure if there's anything that you can compare this to in other sports. Is there anything that springs to mind?
No, but you can miss a putt from 6 feet out. You see golfers do that on a regular, man. So that's
exactly,
like,
that's the point. So the point was that these guys that are like kicking up a fuss, like they were proper like, oh, I can't believe you've asked me to put that. It was like, well, you can miss. So like, of course you're going to, like, that's the gamesmanship side of it. The sportsmanship side would be, all right, you're a professional golfer. I respect your ability. I won't make you put it because I know you would put it nine times out of 10.
No, you've got to earn everything, man. Bunch of pussies, I say. Make them put everything because someone would have missed, you know. Someone would have missed. At least one of them would have, definitely.
Yeah, I think luckily they didn't miss because that would have caused like absolute like furor. Like everyone been kicking off, you know, but who cares? It's golf, innit? we'll move on to number two. So Tyron Woodley has made good on his promise to get an I Love Jake Paul tattoo after his defeat to the social media star in the boxing ring. The two made a pre-fight wager that the loser would have to get the winner's name tattooed on their body. So Woodley proceeded to get the tattoo on his middle finger. So that's pretty appropriate. What do you think of that?
It was sick. But Tino, you saw the fight, innit, a couple of weeks ago between Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley. Did you watch that?
I didn't watch it, and I haven't seen the highlights either. Man. But I know Jake Paul won, didn't he?
You know what? You saved yourself a lot of grief there because it was a proper boring fight, man. It was like...
I refuse to watch it, to be fair.
Yeah, I know. You've got like an 1800s bare knuckle boxer tattooed on your arm. You are absolutely old school, man. It's like, I can see why you didn't engage in that. Why I had to watch it because I'm a bit of a junkie. And like I say, got no loyalty to anyone. I'll literally watch anything.
Yeah, so, we know.
But yeah, so what he's done is he's made a little gentleman's agreement saying, I'll get a tattoo of I Love Jake Paul on him if I lose. But he's got it like right across the bridge of his finger here. So every time he like puts the phone behind him saying like, to his picture, like, I Love Jake Paul, basically telling him to fuck off at the same time. And he thinks he's being clever, but he's still got the tattoo, so it looks like a bit of a mug.
Still
lost
for a YouTuber.
Oh, it's dead, isn't it, man? Absolutely dead.
And he's still getting the rematch out, so.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen either, but still, as if he got paid more for that than he did throughout his whole UFC championship reign, that's fucking disgusting, man.
Yeah, it's terrible. All right, number three is from the NFL. So the Chicago Bears were completely blown out by the Cleveland Browns this Sunday, losing 26-6. The Bears' offense was particularly abominable as they averaged the second fewest yards per play in a game this century. So rookie quarterback Justin Fields on his first start had an average throw time of 0.78 seconds when the NFL average in 2020 was 2.72 seconds. I find this incredible. Baker Mayfield, the opposition quarterback, had a 3.2 second average. So this is the time from when the ball snapped. So basically from the time the quarterback gets the ball to his actual release throw time, he only had 0.78 seconds before he was basically pummeled by a defender. Less than a second.
Your explanations of the NFL are so crucial to my understanding of it. Because like Tino, I've recently tried to follow the Atlanta Falcons because that's where Outkast come from. That's the reason I chose them.
Caroline. And,
so like the commentary on the highlights that I watch is, I don't know what's going on. Like they say loads of things that I don't, like what Bissett just said there, I didn't understand half of it. That's why he had to translate it for me. Are the Bears as bad as the Falcons, Bissett?
I think it might be worse. Like after these first few weeks, like honestly, they might be worse, man. Like we can never get good quarterbacks. That's been the history of Chicago Bears, man. They haven't had a good quarterback in, well, forever, basically.
Even with draft picks and that.
Even with draft picks, this guy's, you know, is this guy's first start. He's just been drafted. So we'll see what he does. But just the fact that he had no time to throw the ball, and they had the second, what was it, the average, the second fewest yards this century. So in the last 20 years. So it was a pretty disgusting performance from the Chicago Bears.
Speaking of disgusting things, and loyalty is becoming quite a theme already in the top five things you may have missed, because Emma Raducanu, dashed off her coach. Is it Andrew Richardson?
Yep.
Yeah, after she won the biggest tournament of her life, as soon as she wins the final, she just dashes her coach off. She says, I need someone with more experience at the top level. And I was thinking to myself, there's loads of worm tongues going on here, loads of people creeping in, trying to get like a couple of little fingertips on all her dough, and they're just trying to exploit her for the top thing. I thought that was just absolutely cheap because she's 18, man. Like, yes, well, yeah, exactly. Do you remember when you were 18, just making bad decisions left, right, and center? And she's, yeah, never mind 18, 29, son. So. But like, she's got loads of people around her. They know she's going to be a star if she's going to be successful. And they're just talking about, like, talking their mates into getting the job, man. I just thought, oh, man, at least give him.
Did she win it? You said, yeah.
Yeah.
She got rid of a coach. That's mad.
When you were seven.
And she came in and was like, what was it, 130? What seed was she coming in? What was she ranked for coming into the tournament?
Yeah, she had to qualify to get into it, didn't she? So she was in the hundreds. And I think she's moved up to like 22nd in the world now. And she's got she still has to get a wild card for her next tournament. So she was so unlikely to get that far. And when it was like beyond the realm of possibility, but I don't know who's got their tentacles wrapped around her to make these sort of decisions. Like, I reckon Tim Henman's involved, man. I've got a sneaky feeling he's involved. I don't know why. I just think he's involved.
Yeah. That Nancy's probably involved, man. Definitely, man. 100%. All right. So for number five, it's not really much to question about this, really. I just want to point out how much of a don Lewis Hamilton is. He won his 100th F1 Grand Prix in Russia last weekend. And to put that in perspective, Michael Schumacher has only got 91 to his name, all right? And he's not going to win anymore after that skiing accident. Sebastian Vettel, yeah? He's only got 56 wins. Hamilton's still only 36 years old. He's got 15 seasons to his name. He's the greatest F1 driver of all time, and he's still going. And he doesn't even get any love. Like, people used to give him all the papers, all the news coverage. It used to be rampant when he first came out in 2009. Now he never even gets a mention. He's the greatest of all time, man. You know what I mean? That's what I want to say about him, really. And he's got sick dreads nowadays as well. And I saw him coming out of a night.
He's dressing funky these days.
And you want to see the bird he walked out of a New York nightclub with the other week as well.
He does what he wants, man.
Yeah, Lewis Hamilton does 100 on the bridge, mate.
Formula One in a while. I used to be mad into it, man, but I haven't watched it. I haven't been in years, man.
It's a tough watch, though, isn't it? Because obviously, by and large, when they get into their positions after two or three laps, they're staying there, man. But Lewis Hamilton's a don because he does a lot of overtaking where a lot of them just like hold positions, and he even fucks over his own teammates to get ahead of him. So I kind of like that about him as well.
He's caused a few crashes here and there, hasn't he?
Oh, more than a few, mate. He's nearly put a few lads in wheelchairs still. Done, like, absolute done.
Is he not with that Nicole Scherzinger anymore? He's filling her in for a few years, wasn't he?
Yeah, the pussycat though. Yeah. He's leveled up by the looks of it, man. I'm telling you.
All right, should we move on to the footy talk then?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do a quick, we'll do a review similar to what we did last week. Just really review the weekend's footy, some of the big moments. I haven't really watched a whole lot of the highlights. I did watch the Chelsea Man City game pretty much in full. But apart from that, Brentford Liverpool, I saw the highlights of that game, 3-3. Great result for Brentford, really. Did either of you guys watch this one?
I watched the first half, yeah, but then I put the undercard of the boxing on, which I wish I didn't really. Well, I say that now, dude, because the undercard was class, but yeah, it was 3-3, wasn't it?
Yeah, 3-3.
It was 1-1, and then I looked and 2 minutes later, it was like 3-3. I was like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, good results elsewhere for Villa. What a result to beat Manchester United at Old Trafford, man.
Villa are flying, aren't they, man? Absolutely flying.
Yeah. See, it's going to taste like ash in Tino's mouth to say anything like that, but...
Yeah, Dean Smith's done really well, to be fair, man. That just shows the show. If you stick with your manager when you're doing crap, I think they were fighting relegation 3 years in a row with him. And then look at him now. Stuck with him through thick and thin, and look what he's doing. Fair play to him.
Do you reckon Jack Grealish was holding Villa back? They're one of the best players in the Premier League. Completely hot. Look what they're doing without him, man.
Oh, yeah. Smash
it's a bit mad. It's mad when you think about it, though.
He's class at City at the minute, man.
They've invested that money well, though, haven't they? Obviously, they signed Leon Bailey, Danny Ings, and who's the other one that they signed?
From Norwich,
right? Andy Buendia, yeah, who's probably the best player in the Championship last season, money. So I think they've invested that $100 million that they've got from him really well. And Grealish didn't have a great game against FIFA Ultimate Team the other day, did he?
yeah, he didn't. He didn't do well in that old best 11 of all time lineup. But just sticking on the Premier League for a bit, Leicester have slipped hard in the last few weeks. Man, I wonder
Jamie Vardy's still
there,
scoring, though, isn't he? Like, fair play to him. Even though they're doing shit, he's still scoring goals at, like, what, 36?
Is that how old he is?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's killing it, man. Killing it, Jamie Vardy is. No, he is.
I'd say like 33, 34. I don't know. Well, maybe he is. I don't know.
35, I don't know. Yeah, 34. Might be 33. 34.
34. Still, he's got quick off the mark. Still a proper predator. Like, he just gets a toe on the ball anywhere around the six-yard box. Can hit it on the volley, like. And he just reacts to things quicker than most other players, man.
Yeah, still got that pace as well. Do you know what I mean? Even at his age, like, that pace has not gone away at all.
Let's give it up. Because Arsenal have won, what, was it 3 on the bounce now in the league? Inshallah. But to be fair, I think that's got more to do with Harry Kane looking absolutely shocking these days than it does with Arsenal being sick.
Shocking as a team. Tottenham have gone bad, haven't they?
It's become a theme of us absolutely digging out Harry Kane every week on this podcast. Ever since the Euros, man, we've just been digging him out every week. Feel sorry for the geezer a little bit.
But what's happened at Spurs? Because like they started off, what did they get? 3-1-0 wins. And then they lost 3-0 to Palace. And then who else did they lose to after that? Was it City or Chelsea? They lost 3-0 to Chelsea, didn't they?
I can't remember. I think it was Chelsea. Then Arsenal, wasn't it?
Yeah, got spanked by Chelsea, yeah.
So they've shipped 9 goals in 3 games, only scored 1. And Kane looks like he's forgotten how to play football, man. I don't... what's the guy's name? Esprit? Nuno?
Yeah, from Wolves. Nuno Espirito Santo, yeah.
Good luck, mate. He's getting the chop before Christmas, isn't it?
Sounds like the Blues. It is the Blues.
I can't wait to hear the bipolar Blues chat, man, later on. It's going to be great.
I don't even want to talk about Blues anymore. Like, when they're doing badly, it's just like, oh, we'll leave that off the podcast this week. Do you know what I mean? But Emile Smith-Rowe obviously got a goal in that game against Spurs. And he can't get into Gareth Southgate's England squad. What's going on? And he's left out Jude Bellingham as well. What is wrong with the guy?
Wait, what? The guy who just took us to the final of the Euros? What's wrong with him? Is that what you're saying? That guy?
What's wrong with him?
That guy who just gave us the best run in the last 60 years of football in England. Oh, what a prick, man. Can't believe it.
Not picking Jude. Not picking Emile Smith.
Brummie, what's he at? What's he playing at?
I think that might be a load management thing. And it just is obviously... Bellingham's still only 18. He's playing like week in, week out in the Bundesliga. He's playing Champions League football. And obviously, he's been involved in the England setup for a long time now. Well, I say for a long time, for about over a year. But I think he just needs a rest, doesn't he?
Mate, 18. I used to be able to go on a 3-day session, have 30 minutes kick and go to uni when I was 18. Forget about too much football, mate.
18, I can still do that now at 29, mate. How old am I?
Oh, my God. But any other notable results from the weekend? Everton bounced back. They win 2-0. West Ham beat Leeds. Leeds just can't get things right at the minute, can they, at all? How long is Marcelo Bielsa going to get there before Leeds fans start thinking, all right, has that kind of like his way of playing, you know, is it not rubbing up the wrong way of Leeds? Is it kind of worn off? Are people trying to, you know, starting to figure them out? It's interesting to see how much longer he's going to get there, because I think they've only won one game this season. I think they might have dropped into the bottom three, have they? In the Premier League,
I think one place above the drop.
So yeah, and you know, down there at the moment, obviously me and you, Tino, were talking about Norwich. You know, they've got that big game against Burnley coming up, but they will have definitely put that on their card. They would have marked their card and said that's the game where we try and get 3 points in it. We ain't worried about losing to Liverpool or Man United, Chelsea, or playing games like that where, you know, the general consensus is that you're going to lose. But them games against Burnley, they're going to be the cup finals for a minute. And 3 points in the Premier League down the bottom gets you out the relegation zone, doesn't it? So what do you think about Leeds? Are they in serious threat of going down?
I think so, yeah, at the minute. But it's tough to say. I watched them against Newcastle a few weeks ago and they were crap, man. But Newcastle were equally as crap. So I think it ended 1-1, so fair result.
Yeah, they've got the same records. They're both, Leeds are just in the relegation zone on goal difference. They both drew 3, lost 3 without a win. So without a win in 6 games, there's 5 teams down the bottom without a win. Southampton, Newcastle, Leeds, Burnley and Norwich. So that Burnley-Norwich game is going to be huge, man, because either team is going to probably get themselves out of the relegation zone. So
yeah. I think Leeds have got a massive game this weekend as well at home to Watford. They really need to win that, the form they're on at the minute. And I think it is a game they can win, to be fair. I mean, in that last man standing, I mean, I was going to go Burnley and you've changed my mind saying, well, with what you've been saying, Norwich need that win, don't they? It's going to be a cup final game for them. So I think I might go Leeds now, home to Watford, because they are due a win. Tough one.
Yeah, Burnley are tough to break down as well, man. Like, you can't really go there expecting to score lots of goals, and they're like struggling at the minute. I think that's a tough ask, really. I don't think like Burnley are a team you can bank on getting points against, even if you're like one of the big teams.
That's the thing, though. How long can Sean Dyche go? Obviously, he's just signed a new, I think, like 4-year contract to Burnley. That's more of a sort of a celebration of how well he's done there since they've been in the Premier League. They must have been in the Premier League for about 8 years now. I don't know how long it's been, but it's been a considerable amount of time. Might even be longer than that.
They went to Europe as well, you know.
Did they get into Europe? Nah, I don't think so. I don't think they've ever finished in the top. They've never finished in the top six, have they?
No, not Europe. Europe. Did they finish eighth one season? Then like qualify Celtic levels, like,
or a cup final, League Cup final, something like that. I can't remember.
Maybe I'm chatting shit, man. Go on, sorry.
They've been there for so long in the Premier League now, playing defensive football. Is that how long can that last? Do you know what I mean? I think with the Premier League, you need to do something different and you need to evolve and adapt, or else teams figure you out. But it's and they don't spend any money either, man. That's the thing. They don't spend much money at all. I think that that Cornet scored a great goal against Leicester. He's their record signing of all time. I think he plays left back. So he looks like a good signing. But generally, they don't spend much money. So, which is a good business plan, I suppose, with those teams that get, you know, they drop into the Championship and they bounce back up. I mean, look at West Brom. They won 4-0 last night in the Championship. Bournemouth are on the same points as them now. And I think Fulham may be a point behind. So, it's the old, like, the same teams that bounce back up, bounce back down, isn't it? So Burnley, even if they do get relegated, it's hard to see that they're going to struggle, because they're going to have the same infrastructure, the same sort of coaching staff in place. So they'll probably just bounce straight back up, even if they do get relegated. So where is the space for teams, you know, to really put a foothold and get promoted from the Championship? That's what makes that league so hard to get out of, doesn't it?
You're talking about a manager who doesn't spend any money and he's a defensive genius. Sean Dyche should go to Barcelona, man, because they were fucking woeful the other night. Absolutely woeful. You like that for a segue, Tino? That's professional, that is, isn't it? Straight on to the next section.
Yeah, I mean, Kit Koeman's got to be losing the plot. I'd say, honestly, he must be on the verge of losing his job. Back-to-back 3-0 losses in the Champions League. Staring at an early exit from the group stages, which would be terrible for them. They're sixth in La Liga, 3 wins, 3 draws. But you know that Koeman's been judged on that European competitions. Last night, right, he took off Piqué after 33 minutes because he was on a yellow card. And who did he replace him with? A 17-year-old centre midfielder called Pablo Gavira. That is the sort of thing that gets you fucking sacked, man. And by the way, did you see who came on in the second half for Benfica? A Streets Won't Forget legend.
Nah, who was it? Tarapt.
I know Tarapt, yeah.
Oh my God, what a gift.
He was Benfica. No way. He was classic in the Championship anyway.
QPR, he looked like a world beater, man.
Yeah, yeah. He's the OG Streets Will Forget, man.
Can't believe I just guessed that correctly, man. My 2009 knowledge is off the chain, man.
I was so going to put crazy. That in the quiz this week, so good job it didn't, man. I've stole you from a point there.
Yeah, usually we do a quiz, Tino, but we've allowed it this week. But I'm glad I would have had that point in the box.
Because right, you know, man. I'm on a 1-1.
Yeah, I think we would have had to tailor the questions to like blues and boxing. And I think you would absolutely had a clean sweep, mate, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
Tino would be, can you name the 1998-99 blues starting 11? And he'd be able to reel him off, man. Martin Granger, Steve Vickers, Ian Bennett, Dele Adebola and Unlove up front. Run, boys. Brian Hughes in the middle. Now, but sticking with the Champions League, obviously, shocking result for Barcelona again. FIFA Ultimate Team beat Manchester City 2-0. I wasn't happy to see that at all. It gave me no joy, PSG getting any kind of success. Obviously, you didn't watch his Tino because you opted to watch the Blues game instead, like a true Blues fan. Did you catch any of this, Jim? Do you think it was a fair reflection on the general sort of flow of the game?
Well, I just watched the highlights as per usual, but by the looks of things, man, what's the PSG's keeper name? Donnarumma.
Donnarumma, the Italian, yeah, 22 years old.
He looked like 32. He had the game of his life, man. It's not as if City didn't have chances, man. It's not as if they weren't creating things. Like, they could have easily have scored 2 or 3 themselves. But look, I'm just buzzing. Messi got on the score sheet, and Mbappe, that little layoff to him, that was primo, man. A couple of weeks ago, they weren't finding him, like, navigating into that space, you know, when, like, he'll run with the ball, distribute it off, and then that space will open up just in front of the penalty area, and then he's on his own for yards. Do you know what I mean? And they exploited that to, like, the nth degree, man. It was sick to see, man. And Messi's like, I'm just happy Mbappe is, like, everyone's getting on that kind of level with him, trying to bring him into the game rather than trying to outshine him like Neymar. Nerves, I hate that geezer so much, man.
Yeah, he wants to be the center of attention. Like, you know, obviously with Messi and Mbappe being there, it's kind of like it's amplified even more now. He's just like desperately trying to do like skills, and like it's just like just play for the team, man. Like, obviously you got great players around you. If you do the things that you're good at, not just try and showboat on the field when it's 0-0. Just because you want the attention to be on you. So I don't really like his attitude towards the game. He's a great player, but I just feel like his attitude and his personality traits do let him down a lot of time. But did you see Kevin De Bruyne's tackle? I can't remember who it was on, but it was a really high challenge. For me, I can't believe that wasn't referred to VAR.
I think it was a fair enough one, though. You do see them giving us red, so he's coming pretty hard, and he's touched the ball, but he's come over the ball and literally studied the geezer really straight high.
It was Trezeguet, wasn't it? The goal scorer used to play for Villa and Everton. But for me, that's a red. That's similar to Aaron Wan-Bissaka's red card 2 weeks ago against Villarreal in the Champions League.
No, not
Villarreal. The other team they played last week. Who was it? I can't remember. Yeah, 2 weeks ago. But it's the same sort of challenge for me.
No, I was surprised, obviously, because you expect them to be giving us reds, but I'm also happy they weren't, because he did get the ball as well. Like, I don't think you can be held accountable for hitting the ball. And what happens after that? That's just what happens, isn't it? The big lads running into each other at top speed, man. That is going to happen, isn't it?
But it's a dangerous tackle, though, isn't it? And I think that's part of the rule and the law is you have to be in control of your challenge. You know what I mean? And I felt like De Bruyne probably wasn't.
It's the law. He can't help. He can't. It's a lot.
The letter of the law.
The letter of the law. I'm glad they're showing him a bit of leniency, but it didn't even change the result, man. Like that. But then again, that's not even the most shocking result of the round, was it? Can you believe Sheriff beat Real Madrid? What the fuck?
I flipped it over for the last 2 minutes, and they were grafting defending with the lives, man. Fair play to them.
The Moldovan massive.
Oh, did you see that winner? That is some Van Basten shit right there, man. On the half volley, left foot straight into the top corner, man. Courtois, he was getting nowhere near that on his best day, man.
Sick. Where are they from? Moldova, did you say, Missy?
Yeah. I think they're the only Moldovan team. I don't assume there's ever been a Moldovan team in the Champions League. They won against Shakhtar Donetsk last week, which was a late goal. And now they beat Real Madrid in their own backyard. Like two wins from two on their first ever appearance in the Champions League. Like it's what dreams are made of, man. And that's Sebastian Till, who scored the goal. He's got a tattoo of himself dreaming of the Champions League on his leg. Like,
that's
just what footy's all about, isn't it, really? Beating the European juggernauts. Ah, oh, I love it. Absolutely love it. 28-1. Get a tenner on that, Tino. I mean, they were 28-1 just to beat Real Madrid last night.
Jesus.
You must have had some accumulators already or whatever on the Champions League. How have you been doing betting-wise?
You know what? I've just realised with that last chat you've had that I actually need to start watching some proper football and not just the Birmingham City games, because number one, we're shit. And number two, I'm missing out on a lot of good football. Betting-wise, I've just been putting little accumulators on the Championship. I don't really bet on Champions League because I don't know what's going on.
You can't fit it all in, though. I don't know how people watch every game. I can get a fairly good idea of what's going on from the highlights, but there's not enough hours in the day, man, to watch them all. I couldn't do that, man.
On top of other sports as well, you know. On top, we were saying this last week. We was like, how on earth can you fit all these sports in? Like, especially like trying to get in like the Ryder Cup, which we're going to talk about in a second. But do you know what I mean? So it's like, how do you fit all these sports that you're interested in? And then you got the boxing, the UFC, which it takes up your whole evening and into the morning if you're going to watch that. It's just like, it's crazy. And if you're into the NFL as well, that's all day Sunday. It becomes a bit exhausting, man, to be honest. Like trying to catch up on all these sports, like.
Yeah, should we just allow the podcast visit? Because I'm starting to feel a bit depressed now. Now you're saying this, man.
I'm allowed to watch one Birmingham City game, two Birmingham City games a week if they're on. Like, I'm never allowed to watch any other football without
allowed.
You're going to get yourself kicked out, son. You want to watch yourself?
She's on nights from tonight until Saturday, so it's football weekend for me.
I like the way you were setting that up as if, oh, yeah, I only watch Blues, so I love Blues, when in reality, Alex is like, give me that fucking remote back now.
Basically.
To be fair, I wouldn't put up with it, man. I wouldn't put up with watching the Blues. Absolutely horrendous viewing. Oh, it really is, man.
It is bad, man, at the minute. Bad.
We'll gloss over the Ryder Cup stuff real quick, just because we had a preview on it last week. And then we're just going to get straight into the combat sports, which is going to take up most of our time, because it was, as you said, Jim, one of the best combinations of boxing and MMA for years.
It's unbelievable, man. I think I've got a bit of a semi right now.
Right, so the Ryder Cup, USA smoked Europe 19-9 in what is the biggest win in modern Ryder Cup history. During the singles matches on Sunday, Colin Morikawa claimed the decisive half point to ensure the US had the required 14.5 points to regain the Ryder Cup, and the famous trophy remained in the United States. It came as no real surprise that the US were triumphant this year, as pound for pound, they have far superior golfers, with world number one John Rahm being the exception. This win for the US will be certainly put the notion forward that there could be a prolonged period of dominance in this tournament for the Americans. And they were, I think, 8-15 at the start of the tournament, Jim. So they were like heavy, heavy favorites anyway.
You know, the 14.5 points required. How does that break down in terms of scoring? Like, is that like a lead that they need to establish, or...
Yeah, because it's split up over, obviously, you've got the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So you've got 3 days of play, and then you've got the sort of like the foursomes, the match play. So you've got like two players that go out in a group. So they go out in a pair and they play by the hole. So match play. And then you've got on the last day, it's all singles. So it's basically a one-on-ones. So whoever wins the hole gets the point. So basically there's a certain allocated amount of points that you can win. So if they get to that threshold or above that threshold, then they basically cement the win. But like USA, they just completely dominated, man, to be honest. Like, they have got like the best golfers by far in the world at the minute. And it's hard to see, you know, how they're not going to, for the next 6 years at least, win, because they've got a lot of young golfers. Obviously, Morikawa only 24. You've got Bryson DeChambeau's only 28. I think Brooks Koepka's 30. Spieth's still young. Justin Thomas is still young. So all that core group, they're going to be there for the next 10 years if they stay on the game. And then Rory McIlroy, obviously, he was brilliant 8 years ago, but he's really done nothing since then. So it's kind of like our top golfers are kind of, you know, on the downslope. Their top golfers are on the upslope. So it's difficult to see how we compete against them.
Is there anyone else apart from John Rahm who, like, you'd actually say, oh, they're a good addition to the team? Or are Europe literally waiting for like the next generation of like 17, 18-year-olds to come through?
Yeah, in a way. Yeah, we are. We were looking to sort of, obviously we've got Tommy Fleetwood. I'm not sure exactly how old he is, but he's not very old. He's a good player. But yeah, I think we are looking for a couple of superstars to come through, or, you know, which, you know, isn't beyond the realm of possibilities, open up and make that USA versus rest of the world. You know, it used to be USA versus Great Britain, and then we kept on getting beat. We opened up to Europe. I don't know whether they would change it again, but if it was rest of the world, that'd make it more competitive. But it has been competitive, I suppose. Europe won the last, I think they won the last three or four, I think. I don't think they won it in about 8 years, something like that, I think it was. USA,
as you say, just got smoked, and you know, the future looks a bit dark. But that'd be embarrassing, man, if they're like, yeah, Europe, we're kind of getting murked there. Can we get a few South African lads?
Yeah,
that'd be it. Do you know what I mean? Can we get the
South African players, definitely. That's what they'll be aiming for. Get Hideki Matsuyama in. Japanese golfer, won the Masters last year. Right, so let's get straight into the combat sports, because this is going to be a good old discussion. You're going to kick us off with the MMA, Jim, yeah?
Yeah, man, UFC 266. And I've written quite a lot in the script, but I think we should keep it to the bare bones, just for the fact of, like, I really want to talk about AJ and Usyk. And I really want to... Tino got me gassed earlier, telling me, like, he spotted a load of, like, different southpaw stuff. And I didn't really spot. So we'll kick off with Robbie Lawler and Nick Diaz. They had their rematch 17 years in the making, 5-round fight. I don't think Nick Diaz fought in like 6 years before this. Robbie Lawler's been active, but I think he's lost 4 or 5 on the trot or something like that. And basically, Robbie Lawler just broke him, just broke his heart. Nick Diaz came out flying, throwing a lot of punches. I mean, in terms of not throwing 100% in every punch, like tap, tap, bang, tap, tap, bang, and then mixing up his rhythm from there, it was really impressive to see someone who's nearly 40 years old, who hasn't had a fight in 6 years, to maintain that kind of rhythm. So you can tell he's been in the gym. You can tell he's been training. But for me, he didn't look in great shape. And once Robbie Lawler started walking him down, slipping him from side to side, and made him work. And that's the most important thing. Nick Diaz wasn't throwing when he wanted to throw. He was throwing because he had to keep Lawler off him. And then Lawler started mixing in really hard body shots. I remember one kick to the body in particular, literally sunk in under his rib, and it made me feel sick on the replay. So I think the tide turned in the second round. And in the third, I think Robbie Lawler landed another body shot, And then I think it might have been a right hook, was it? And then Nick Diaz went down and he lay on his back as if to welcome him into a grappling exchange, a submission. And Lawler was like, nah, mate, I'm not doing any of that. He's like, get off now. And then Nick Diaz was like, fuck that. I'm not getting up and taking another pound in. It was sick, man. You watched the fight in a sports bar, didn't you? Is it?
Man, I was at home for this one. I was going to go out and watch. Obviously, the boxing was on a little bit earlier for me. And this fight came on about around 9:30, but I was just watching in the house. But yeah, I think there was a clear difference in the physical stature of both fighters. It was quite clear that Diaz had 6 years out of the ring. And I think Lawler, he's still active, isn't he? So I think he had a fight probably a year and a half ago or something. So you could tell, man, just he looked fit. Lawler looked, yeah. He actually did look fit. But it was quite a sad ending for me. Like, it never at any point looked like Nick Diaz wanted to be back in the cage, like at all. He'd spoke pre-fight about his complete lack of desire to get back involved in it. And then his post-match comments, he seemed completely out of it, to be honest. And at one point said that he didn't even know how the fight came about. So it was making me feel a bit sad, to be honest. And it couldn't have been any more obvious to me. There was no definite, but it looked like it was for purely financial reasons. Like, and that was the rhetoric from him, both in the lead up to the fight and after. But having said that, you know, 6 years to get back in the octagon with a half-assed training camp, little to no desire to actually fight and show a performance like that, for me, deserves like a hell of a lot of credit.
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, think about like any fighter, boxer or MMA, if they come back after a long layoff, like 6 years is a long time to not fight. I mean, like Tino, you know yourself, sparring's not fighting, is it? And like even the difference between a 3-round spar and a 3-round amateur contest, which you had like 50 of them or however many had it, would you like 31-7 or something like that?
Yeah, 27 and 11, so I had
38. So you know, you went through that process time and time again, and then you'd be like, oh, I've just won a fight. You go on the lash for like 6 weeks, and then you get back in the gym and you'd be like, fuck me, man, I can't even do basic things, man, like my body's fighting me. I don't know how Diaz was able to do that. Like you say, it's for the dough, isn't it? I know for a fact, you know, your brother Joe, he loves the Diaz brothers, man. So we're gonna have to get him on.
With you now, I can't really get involved. I only watched the main event, the highlights you sent me earlier, so I didn't watch the undercard or anything. But he'd love to be talking about this now. He loves the Diaz brothers.
He's always chatting about it in the group chat, and you and your dad are just like, yeah, can we just move on to the boxing? But the next, I suppose it was the co-main event, and we'll do this one quickly. It was Valentina Shevchenko, the Bullet, the Georgian Queen. She is a bad bitch, man. I love watching her fight. Basically, she's got this poor girl called Lauren Murphy going after a title, and she's beat the living fuck out of her, man, for 4 rounds. There was one point where early in the fight, Shevchenko threw a kick. Lauren Murphy has caught the kick, right? So you think, oh, that's a bad position for Shevchenko, right? Shevchenko's grabbed her by the throat on one leg, hopping around, and started banging her in the face as she's got, and it's like, oh, okay, I can't do nothing against that now. Then it's just body kicks, head kicks, right hooks, grabbing her, dragging her to the ground, punching her in the face. That happened. That was like another 20 minutes, man. I think
you're allowed to grab him by the throat, like, you can do anything in UFC, can't you?
Yeah, she couldn't kick her in the fanny, like, but it was a
gouge her eyes out.
We'll gouge her eyes out. More importantly, man.
There's a few things you can't do then.
Yeah, but I think that was the, what was it now? It was the sixth defense of a belt. The only time she's lost in recent memory was against Amanda Nunes, who's gone on to be a 2-weight world champion, one of the best in the world. And I just think, you know, she's like an elite level fighter, man. But as you say, we'll move on to the main event. Alexander Volkanovski, Brian Ortega for the featherweight title. Now, you've just watched the highlights, man. What did you write? The first thing you said was that that Baldy Gaze is an animal.
So I was watching it. I took a few notes there, but I don't know his name. So I just literally got Baldy. It was written like, the last note I wrote was Baldy is an animal. Because he was savage, wasn't he? I think in the first round, he lands an overhand right and catches him, and you landed him all through the highlights I was watching. He was landing him at ease, man.
Oh, Volkanovski's an Aussie, ain't he? They're always a bit nuts, aren't they?
Yeah, you watched this one as well, ain't it, Bissett? So what was like? Okay, you know, I predicted that Ortega was winning, ain't it? So what was your impression as the fight unfolded?
For me, it was Volkanovski. Like it was all down to the fact that he managed in that third round. That was the key round for me. It was kind of bouncing back and forth a little bit. Obviously, I'd had that bet based on your predictions that Ortega was gonna come through, but no, don't shake your head, man, because it was nearly there, man. There was times where Ortega, when he got him in those submission positions, and like as you were saying, like he was like a submission specialist. you thought, right, this it's all over, man. He's going to tap him. He's going to tap out. Volkanovski cannot manage to get out of this, or he's going to faint. And somehow...
At the end of the round three, he should have finished it from what I've seen. He had him, and he was trying his hardest to choke him out, wasn't he? And that Boldy was having none of it, man. He's a warrior, man.
Honestly, how he managed to, like, keep himself, like, engaged and basically not faint in those two... There was two scenarios, weren't there, Jim? I think there was... How quickly Ortega got into that, the guillotine. Like, it was amazing how quickly he got him into that, wasn't it?
That was lightning, man. And bear in mind, they've got five-minute rounds in MMA. So they've been fainting, punching, kicking each other for 10 minutes already. Ortega's face is already a mess by the third round, right? Volkanovski threw a left lead leg kick. He's landed it, but Ortega's caught it with his right hand and threw a left at the same time. And he's dropped Volkanovski. It didn't really hurt him, but the momentum and the positioning and the timing put him on his ass. Volkanovski was already on his way back up. Ortega snapped that guillotine on in no time, man. He's like under the chin, right? He's wrapped full guillotine. And then he's got one leg over his shoulder. And then he kind of moves his hips down. He like entangles his feet underneath Volkanovski's ass. So he's got no purchase anyway. He's pushing on his hips. He's kicking about. He's writhing. Like, looked like he was panicking to me. Like, he's like, fuck, I'm going to lose my title here. And I don't know what happened. I think Ortega might have just burnt his arms out, maybe. Just like ran out of steam, kind of. So, and even then, as soon as, like, the moment Ortega let that go, Volkanovski was scrambling, got a single leg. He's on top, punching him, elbowing him. And then Ortega wriggles his hips, throws up the triangle again, right? Volkanovski's trying to squash him, trying to punch him. While that's happening, he's re-wrapped his legs. So his legs are in one position. He holds his shin, moves his other leg over the top, squeezes that triangle. And then you think, oh my God, he's definitely fucked there. Absolutely, definitely fucked. And then somehow he gets out of that as well. And then for the rest of that round, yeah, it was just a savage beat down, man. He was just punch, punch, back, elbow, punch. The referee looked like he was going to stop it to me.
Yeah.
And I think he was pretty much unconscious by the end of the round, to be honest. Yeah, and
he went on the floor at the end of the round, didn't he, for like 10, 15 seconds, just didn't even get up.
I think the ref would have been within his rights to stop it there, you know.
I'm surprised because obviously the amount of, since I've been watching the UFC, in those kind of scenarios usually gets called. So, but fair play, because it did make for good viewing. And Ortega did get a second wind as well, didn't he, in the fight?
Yeah, late in the fifth round, I think. But by then, I think he was taking a steady beating, man. And I think, you know, I wanted them to give him full benefit of the doubt as well. But at the same time, I think they probably give him too much time to recover. Like, the referee was asking him, are you okay? He's going, yeah, I'm fine. The doctor's in there looking at him. Are you all right? Can you see how many fingers? These are crucial seconds to get a bit of wind back. For me, yeah, I'm a fan of both of these geezers for life now, especially Ortega, because the first thing he said after the fight is like, look, man, he's like, don't feel bad for me. I'll learn from this. He's like, I've put it all out here now. I'm only going to improve. I'm only going to get better. He's like, just, I love you all. And then I think about 45 minutes later, he was getting wheeled off, probably less than that, getting wheeled off into an ambulance, absolutely fucked, tweeting people, saying, like, pray for me. And he must have felt like he was dying, man. So, yeah, hats off to both of them geezers, man. But, yeah, UFC 266 was more than it could have ever, like, been promised. But let's move on to the real fight, man. I'm not going to be smug about it, yeah, but I called it, man. I said Usyk was going to win.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I wish I would just would have slapped 100 quid on Usyk, man. I should have just listened to you, mate.
From the beginning, I was steaming on the night, nerves. How many boxing matches I've missed because I've been absolutely twisted off Henry Weston, Jay, is a joke, and I need to stop doing that. But the thing is, it did make me re-watch it on Tuesday. Yeah, I think it was Tuesday night. Notepad in hand, no commentary, which is crucial to when you're trying to watch a fight, man. Commentary is the devil. Especially when it's Sky or the Zone and they're trying to like be halfway up AJ's ass and just trying to convince you of like whatever they're trying to do. But yeah, so Tino, you've just watched it afresh yourself. You've got some insights on the southpaw level. I think the official scores were 117, 110, 116, no, 117, 111, 116, 112, 115, 113, all for Usyk. AJ's dropped all his belts. The Fury fight's up in flames. How did the fight go for you, man?
I watched it on the night and I thought Usyk won easily. I'd hardly give any rounds to AJ, but I watched it again today. Had it 117, 111. And it was it was closer than I thought a few rounds. AJ was, fair play to him because he was trying to box a boxer, which didn't work. But fair play to him for trying to do it. Like he was trying to win at a boxing game, which he was not good enough for. Usyk was just phenomenal, man. His footwork, his head movement, he was just class, man. And like you see it straight away from the off in the first round, as a southpaw, you are taught straight away, it's a battle of the front foot. Your right foot and his left foot, you want to stay on the outside of that foot, leading him onto your left hand, and he wants to do the opposite, leading you onto the right hand. And straight away, Usyk stamped his authority, and you see him land that left straight hand straight away. It's only a little one with no power, but he hits him straight away, and you're like, I remember thinking, oh my God, he's going to knock him out, man. He's going to knock him out, AJ out. He's sussed him already. But he stuck to the boxing, like, fair play to him. He did what he had to do. He seen that AJ was dangerous at times, so he just stayed away, and he absolutely donned it, man.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen a boxer so active with his feinting, man. I don't think I've ever seen it. It was exhausting to watch, you know. Like, what he was doing with his right hand, like, he was waving it about. And it, like you said just then, like, he put a left hand on him straight away, no power. He's just letting him know he can get there. So yeah. when he's feinting, he's making Joshua react. And bear this in mind, yeah. A few years ago, Joshua couldn't even go 3 or 4 rounds without blowing out of his arse. And he managed to keep that pace, mentally exhausted with Usyk, man. I remember, like, on that night, I was bigging up AJ and everyone was telling me to shut the fuck up, innit, because I was pissed. But I was like, mate, you've got to give him a lot of credit for what he's doing.
He deserves so much respect for that fight, going 12 rounds with Usyk, to be fair. Because Usyk, at times, Usyk could have blasted him out of there, I reckon, but he stuck to his boxing because at times, AJ let him know that he's a powerful man. I think it was round two. Round two was a bit close, you know.
Yeah. I had that as coin toss, really.
Yeah, dancing away, and he's caught him with a left hook and shocked Usyk a bit and then went down and hit him with a jab to the body. That was good boxing from AJ, man, but I think that's what made Usyk realise I'm not going to put it on him, I'm just going to stick to my boxing.
All right, Tino, I was interested because when I was chatting with you during the fight about something you mentioned, and it's something I'd never really heard of. You said that Usyk was having a tactical round off. And I was thinking, is this something that boxers will usually they'll weave into their fight game plan? As it was quite clear that Usyk been, like, I think he's over a stone lighter than Joshua, I think, is it? Something like that. Yeah, was he like 15 stone 11 or something? And Joshua was set in the 17s. Is it something like that? I think the round in question was somewhere around the 5th or 6th, certainly one of AJ's sort of winning rounds. Is the idea of, you're right, I've dominated the last two rounds from Usyk's perspective. I'm going to just stay in there for 3 minutes this round, recoup my energy, and then go again and put the pressure back on next round. Is that something that boxers do?
Yeah, I think it was round 5. I said he was having a... At the time when I watched it, I said, I think he's having a breather. But watching it again earlier, at the end of round 4, Joshua starts battling for obviously the battle of the front foot. He starts getting it a bit better and he lands a few shots on Usyk, catches him running away again. And I think that's the 5th round and the 6th round I give to Joshua, because I thought Usyk was having a breather at the time. But I think that's because Joshua won that battle on the front foot at the end and put him on the back foot a little bit.
I'm so buzzing you scoring it like this, because I never know, like, whether I'm... Basically, I don't know what I'm... I've watched a lot of boxing, but I don't really understand it because I haven't done it. Do you know what I mean? There's another level of understanding something if you do it. Do you know what I mean? So... Yeah. I thought the 2nd round could have gone either way. I wouldn't have been mad if they gave it either way. But the 5th and the 6th round, man, Joshua, I was thinking, if I was watching that for the first time sober, I'd be thinking that, oh, he's coming on now. He's coming on. Like, I'd be thinking, Usyk can't do this all night. He can't keep moving like that. He's a big lad himself. You have to take breathers. But then that's the function of the feint, isn't it? Because you don't have to be throwing loads of punches. There were times when he was moving outside of where Joshua's lead hand would be. He's moving to his right, but then Josh was thinking, fuck, I've got to throw a punch now. So he's making him tap, and then Joshua couldn't get himself set anyway. So he's thinking, where's he going to be? Where's he going to be? Complete mental exhaustion, man. I was thinking, I mean, how do you, let's say the rematch here, how do you stop him doing that, man? What can you do to stop Usyk moving like that? No, it's a problem.
I think AJ could win the rematch potentially, because I think after the 5th and 6th round, Usyk come out the 7th round and had the best round of his fight. I think he absolutely put Joshua back in place. That's where Joshua should have switched the tactics and thought, boxing ain't working now. He's a big bloke with a lot of weight. He should have started roughing him up and throwing him about and leaning on him and tiring him down. And that's what would have changed the fight. He could have potentially knocked Usyk out later on. If you watch as well, I watched the highlights earlier, he starts roughing up Usyk and he lands a body shot. It's low, but it's not too low. It was on the belt, and Usyk complains to the ref. And then he grabs Usyk and he grabs him and tries to throw a shot while he's grabbing, and Usyk's complaining to the ref again. He didn't like it, man. So AJ wins the fight if he bullies him and wears him down, leans on him, just throws him around. He's a true fighter, rather than trying to box a better boxer.
Mate, I feel like you've read my notes, man.
Do you think, Tino, because there were suggestions from a lot of sources in the media, and I've read this sort of comment quite a few times on sort of Facebook and stuff like that, that there was too much influence from Joshua's corner, or too many voices from Joshua's corner that were telling him to do various things. And perhaps his game plan was a bit muddled because of people giving different opinions and giving too much of a voice. Do you think there's any of that? Is there a potential when you're sort of like, was it a four belt world champion? And the fact that he sort of like got so many sort of like influences from different people, does that make an effect on how you approach a fight of that magnitude?
Yeah, maybe. I think he just had a game plan that didn't work. I think they went in there to try and outbox him. And he's good at throwing straight shots when he boxes AJ, but I think it just didn't work. And you see, it didn't work. So that's where someone should have told him to change it up. But I really don't know what was going on. Obviously, you can have people in your ear and there's too much going on, but he's a professional at the top level. He should only be listening to Rob McCracken and whoever's second in charge in his corner. So if he is listening to other people, then that's not a world champion in head, really.
And I think as well, like AJ, against most people he fights, he's got a speed advantage, man. Like against Kubrat Pulev, did you see? I watched that at yours, didn't I, Bissett? He looked like he had the hand speed of a middleweight that night, man. Obviously, Kubrat Pulev is quite slow by comparison to Usyk. But I think, like you say, man, I think Joshua was kind of banking on his speed and thinking he was going to shock Usyk by managing to box with him. And it didn't happen like that. I was so captivated by the technical aspect of it. I couldn't really get a gauge on how entertaining the fight was. So, like, Bissett, like, what, when you were watching it, were you thinking this is a fucking boring fight? Or were you kind of wrapped up in the whole occasion as well?
No, absolutely. Every single round for me had, like, 100% interest. Everything had, it had a little bit sprinkled into every single round. Do you know what I mean? And as Tina was saying, like, in that sort of the middle of the fight, fifth, sixth round, it did look like Joshua was starting to get back to find his feet, really, and starting to, as a commentator was saying, work him out, which you were saying, Jim, you shouldn't really listen to the commentators because they were coming out with some stuff that you look back on, you think, nah, like that was wrong. In the third round, they were saying, oh, yeah, don't think Usyk can keep this pace up. But he did. Do you know what I mean? And they were saying, oh, Joshua's coming into the fight now. He's starting to figure him out, but he didn't. So it really did have a back and forth. Like, it was a lot like the Volkanovski fight in a way. It was like sort of swinging back and forth. You didn't really know which way it was headed.
I'm going to contradict myself here. Those things you just outlined that the commentators were saying were all things that I were thinking at the time. Like, I was thinking, there's no way Usyk can keep this movement up. I'd be absolutely shocked. Even though I've seen him do it at cruiserweight, he's put on about a stone, steadily moved up to heavyweight. He looked in peak condition at the weigh-ins, man. And I, stylistically, I thought it'd be a problem for AJ. But I take a lot from the weigh-ins and the face-offs and all that little, like, that preamble stuff. I really do take a lot from all that. And I seen the way Usyk was looking at him and like as if he had a secret that Joshua didn't know about yet. Do you know what I mean? And I was,
oh, gargoyle eyes he's got, man.
Yeah, yeah. And the handshake, and he's like, mate, you wait till tomorrow, man. I thought, oh, AJ's fucked it. Yeah.
You're one of my favourite fighters now, man. That was a class performance, man. He just absolutely smashed it, man.
He's like, yeah. I'm very feel. That's the classic online.
I'm very feel. Heavyweight champion of the world.
I think he'd absolutely score Deontay Wilder. That's just, for me, that's just straight facts, man. But yeah, again, against Tyson Fury, I don't think, how does that fight play out, man?
It's the ultimate chess game, that would be, man. It would be what a fight to watch, man. Because that's two boxers trying to box each other. Like, AJ is a good boxer, but he's not as good as Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury, Usyk would be class, man.
Do you think he'd fall into the same trap, though, and try and box Usyk? Or do you reckon he'd use every single pound of that 20 stone he's got and just do what...
He'd box and he'd rough him up. I think Tyson Fury would stop him, I do.
Oh, good shout. Go on, Tino, son. Hot take.
Round eight or nine, I reckon.
He's a freak, though, isn't it? Like, a bloke his size and at that weight should not be able to move the way Tyson Fury does. Like, he would be just a completely different... He'd be an enigma, wouldn't he, for Usyk. So that fight's got to be the next one. It's got to be the next heavyweight fight on the tip of everyone's tongues.
If AJ don't have the rematch, because to be fair...
AJ, it's in the contract, isn't it? I think, yeah, it's in the contract for the rematch. So he's going to get that, obviously.
Well, you know, it's whether, like, I think AJ will take that rematch because I don't think he's scared of no one, man. I think this is what I like about him. I said this the other week. I feel like he's got a public image to uphold, but he's a serious fighter and he's gonna relish the opportunity to prove everyone wrong again. Look, look what happened with Ruiz, man. Like, he'd be well within his rights just to just swerve that one. Let Dillian White have that fight. Let Dillian White beat him and then get Dillian White for, like, the rematch from the British title a few years ago and just bang him out again. There's loads of ways. There's loads of fights he doesn't have to take, but he takes them. So I can see him doing that. But going back to the Fury-Usyk thing, I don't see Tyson Fury with his height advantage. I don't see him biting on those feints in the same way, you know. I don't think he's going to be reacting, like, doing all this. I think he's just going to lean back. Try and fucking touch me. Yeah, good luck.
Lean back on the ropes and, like, you ain't going to get to me, man. Tyson Fury can bob and weave very well as well. Just where AJ hasn't got that. AJ's just stiff coming forward, Frank Bruno style, any sort of...
Did you think he was hurt in the 12th round?
Nah, not at all. He was hurt... what round was it? I wrote it down. He hurt Joshua.
Third.
Yeah, it was early on, man, I think. He caught him he wobbled him, man.
But, his legs went... Yeah,
round eight as well. Round eight, Joshua hit him with a heavy few shots at the end of round eight, man.
Yeah, like there was one punch in particular he had success with. He led with the right hand, Joshua, with no wind up, and every time he led with the jab, Usyk was gone. Like, he could just see it coming. But when Usyk came forward, Joshua would meet him with the right hand, and that's when he'd land it every time. But then again, Usyk was like, he's got more strings to his bow, and he, like, then he's back, he's hitting you in the body, he's faking to throw right hooks, he's in, he's out. There were times when he was nearly, like, going behind.
For putting up with it for that long, because that would have been so hard for anyone, man. Like, Usyk was just like there, and he was like, literally, a jab would come over the top from Joshua, and he'd slip and just touch him with the left hand, try and get into the right. And Joshua handled it right. They were controlling the center of the ring, both of them, to be fair, fighting for it, man. But Usyk just got the better of it.
So that's an interesting question for both of you, really. So how is the perception of Joshua as a fighter? Like, what's the sort of general public perception of him now? Obviously, he's lost his titles, which no fighter wants to do. But by what you guys are saying, is you've almost kind of, like, got a little bit more respect for Joshua now that he has gone 12 rounds with Usyk and the way he moves, and with being such a lighter fighter, but having that sort of, like, the sort of the better technical ability. So what are your opinions on Joshua now?
Yeah, I think the public will think he's a pussy after that, I reckon. I've seen a load of comments on Instagram and everything, people slating him. But yeah, my respect's gone up for him after that, man, because, like, they're not looking at the boxing like we was and how he was handling it. They're expecting him to go out and blast the little man out, Usyk, a little man who's moving up to heavyweight. They're thinking, oh, he's going to knock him out easy, this, that, the other. But it wasn't easy at all, man. And Usyk proved that he did his job.
That was way more devastating than Andy Ruiz lost, man. 100%. Because he's got, like, again, it's like you were saying, the fight was closer than I first thought, man. Like, but even then, like, Usyk was the clear winner. Let's get it right, man. Most people who watch AJ fights, they don't watch, like, boxing week in, week out. So you can kind of, you can't really expect them to be like, oh, that was good, lad. Look at the way he was dealing with his feints. He was matching his feet and all that shit. So, I mean, Anthony Joshua as a personality is absolutely hated in this household, man. Like, we see him go on FC UK adverts and Lucas A battles, and we're like, oh my God, will this guy fuck off, man? But as a fighter, I absolutely love him. Do you know what I mean? I think he's, considering he only started boxing when he was 18, like, he comes back from adversity. I think his resume overall is better than Tyson Fury's, man, to be honest with you. We were looking at his resume last week. You think, like, AJ's got Ruiz twice, probably top three or four heavyweight in the world. He's got the Klitschko defeat. Yeah, Klitschko probably had 2 years off, but still an all-time great heavyweight for me. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. I just think the Povetkin win, that looks better with age. Do you know what I mean? As well. And even though he's a smaller fighter, I mean, you do expect him to beat. There are intangibles, and he's beating Olympic gold medalists, long-time reigning world heavyweight champions, man. That's not a small deal, man, at all. I look forward to the rematch, man. And I hope... here's a quick one, because I don't know when I'm going to get you on the podcast again, Tino. What do you think about Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder, the trilogy fight?
Absolute danger for Fury, man. Wilder's got nothing to lose, man, and he can bomb. We all know he can bomb, and Fury knows he can bomb from that first fight. So I think it's absolute danger. He should do the job, and he should do it quicker, really, but who knows? It's heavyweight boxing, isn't it?
What do you think this is?
Yeah, I'd say the same as you, man, Tino, but, like, going after a second fight, Fury just completely dominated him, didn't that, in that second fight. Wilder's another, what, he's another 2 years older now, I think, since the first fight. where it was a lot more competitive. And we know that Wilder, he there's so many fights that he's in that he hasn't really got a chance until he lands that big punch. I think it was against Luis Ortiz, the couple of fights he had against him.
They
stick out in my memory as Ortiz really dominating the fight, and he was in sort of late 30s, maybe even early 40s at that time as well.
Late 50s, fucking hell. He ain't got his birth certificate.
He's still good doing it when he was like 40. I think he was winning that second fight. Where was it? The eighth round, he got knocked out.
Yeah. Might have even been letting that. Was he letting that? And, you know, he was, Ortiz was dominating that fight. And then obviously Wilder's got his trump card, hasn't he? Of just being able to knock anybody out at will. So I don't know if I can see it. I can't see him knocking Fury out. So in that case, you can't see him win the fight.
I think there's a real danger of Fury. But the thing is, Fury's a confidence fighter. And if he walks in there thinking he's going to blast him out, I think he will, man. Do you know what I mean? If he walks in there thinking he's he does that every time, then it's, I suppose, Fury. But I think the beating he put on him in the second fight was a bit of a life changer. I really do, man. I think he took right hands in that fight early, and he took them flush, and he just shook them off. Do you know what I mean? And I think that would have given him an extra mental edge, like he needs any more confidence. but like we were saying about AJ earlier, he's come back from adversity. Wilder's never had to come back from something like that. And like you say, he's 37-ish, 36, 37, getting up there now. He's had a long career himself, you know. I wonder, I think it's like the perfect storm. I think it might be an early stoppage for Fury, you know.
Yeah, sure, I think the same. But there's always, if Wilder goes in there, nothing to lose and thinks, I'm going to get blasted out of here earlier, he might just go out all guns blazing first round, you never know.
That's what he'll have to do, man. Torpedoes, yeah. Man, all guns blazing. Because then, look, I'm going to look like a dickhead now. Watch him knock out Fury in the first round.
Is that next weekend? Is that October 9th?
The 8th, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So anything going on this weekend in terms of MMA boxing?
No, I wanted to get balls deep in the reviews, man. I'm sure there is stuff, but what we'll do is we'll review it next week, and then we'll just pick up the previews from there. But Tino, can I say, it's been an absolute pleasure, man. This has been wicked. And I think the...
I've enjoyed it, man.
Nah, the extra voice has been nuts, man. Especially for the Blues chat, man. The Blues are losing 5-0, and we still managed to talk about them more than PSG, man.
Yeah, we never lost 5-0. You know what I mean?
I knew I'd get you biting on that one. So we never lost that, but it was way less than that. Still got absolutely great.
I've enjoyed it. That's nice one for having us on, man. It's been mint.
Anytime, son. Anytime.
Probably ended there, to be fair.
Are you still on the socials, Bissett?
I'm fucking trying, man, to be fair.
What's the social media?
Yeah, yeah, man's got a full-time job. He's got a coaching job. He's got a wife, and I'm bollocking him for not doing the social.
Fucking standard, is it, man? Where are you playing at, man?
Where's Piz, man? When you need him, like, that's...
Joe Bar's cracking the whip on him now.
Oh, is he? He's getting worse.
Oh, shit. Yeah, we'll definitely get you on again, man. I know you got bare energy now, you're off the sauce, mate. So we'll sort you out, mate.
5 weeks clean, lads, man. I'm fresh.
I don't want to clap because it'll come up on the audio, man.
We're going to cut it before this anyway. Sound?
No, I'll probably keep all this in. I want to get the dig in at Pizzy, don't I? To be sure.
I don't think he's not a listener anymore, is he? I think he's sacked off.
All right, then, sound, boys. I'll catch you both later. All right.
Enjoy it, man. Take it easy.
In a bit. Nice one.